Everybody, welcome back. For those of you joining live, so glad to have you here. If you're watching on YouTube, listening later on Spotify, Apple Music, or if you're watching the webinar later on in Speech Therapy PD, I'm so glad to have you here. My name is Corinne Smoos, MSCCC SLP, and this is the Gestalt Get Together. This is your podcast for talking about Gestalt language processing, also the autistic neurotype, sensory, acoustic, decision making, music, and how our field is responding to this growing world of GLP discourse. Like I said, my name is Corinne, and I love Gestalt language processors, like, period. Love them. I work with them every day. They're my whole caseload. And I've had huge success using ideas from proposed frameworks like NLA. And I also identify myself as lovingly skeptical because I want more information, I want more data, and I want more evidence all at the same time. One of my goals is to synthesize exciting ideas from the worlds of language research, music, psychology, neuroscience. I'm going to bring in a couple for today's episode to support the conversation we're having so that you can feel more confident working with the Gestalt language processors in your life. Today's episode, we're really going to be focusing on just practical, ready-to-go ideas. So many of you who are listening, you're busy parents, you're busy clinicians. You just want a couple of things that you can try tomorrow to feel more successful. And today's conversation, we hope that you take away a couple of those. Now, this podcast recording or webinar is 1 hour, and it's going to be offered for 0.1 ASHA CEUs. Now, before you meet my guest, I do have two announcements. First, do you know someone who would like to get ASHA CEUs for an episode like this? If so, use my code Gestalt33 to get one speech therapy PD course for free. And secondly, are you going to the ASHA convention? If so, come see me on Thursday at 4:30 p.m. for my seminar called Using Rhythm to Enhance Autistic Language Acquisition. All right, without further ado, let me tell you a little bit of our guest for this evening's episode. Kim Jenkins, MSCCC SLP, is a neurodiversity affirming pediatric speech language pathologist with 27 years of experience. That is so impressive. She's the owner of Empowering Speech Services, where she works with neurodivergent children with needs that range from executive functioning, literacy, articulation, and GLP. Kim is also a digital content creator with a Teachers Pay Teachers store, and she offers neuroaffirming and language resources for SLPs, educators, and parents. I first met Kim on the best and worst place in the world, Instagram, and I've really enjoyed the way that she talks about her work with GLPs, and I wanted to learn more about how she approaches literacy, pre-literacy, and everything related to that in her work with the GLP population. Kim, welcome to the podcast.
Hello.
Thank
Thank you
you.
for having me. I'm so
Yeah.
excited to be here, and I love that music that you guys are playing at the beginning.
It is a super, super jazzy tune. Yeah.
Yes.
Thank
Reminds
you
me of Harry
again.
Connick Jr.
Oh, yeah, I can hear
Love
that.
it. Yeah.
All right. So I gave a bit of an intro, but I would love to hear more detail about what your career as an SLP has looked like, and then how did you get to GLP later on?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So, I went to the University of Tennessee in Knoxville for my graduate degree. And while I was there, I fell in love with the deaf population. And so, I worked at Tennessee School for the Deaf for 3 years after I got out of school. But during my training to go there, I was involved with hearing impaired children who wore cochlear implants and hearing aids. And we did a lot of we called it natural therapy, where we immersed them in language and really worked heavily on different ing verbs, past tense verbs, basically modeling language naturally through books, through play. And that's where I really got interested in it, because we would basically help children acquire language naturally. And I really loved that population. And then after I worked at Tennessee School for the Deaf, I worked at the University of Tennessee in Knoxville for 12 years. And then we moved to the Atlanta area where I worked in the public school system and kind of got away from working in the deaf culture just because I had kids and I was wanted to work part-time instead of more of a full-time job. So I went into the school system, and the The second school that I worked in, there were six autistic classrooms. And so I didn't know what Gestalt language processing was, and honestly did not learn about it until I had been in that school for 3 years, because it kind of just came back out in social media, even though it's been around forever, came back out in social media through Meaningful Speeches course. And so I got really interested in it and found out that, wow, this echolalia is truly meaningful, and just took everything I learned in the Meaningful Speech course and through Marge Blanc's book, Natural Language on the Autism Spectrum, and started implementing that in my speech therapy sessions. So everything I learned at the University of Tennessee that I basically applied with my hearing impaired and deaf children, I was able to take and apply to my Gestalt language processors because there were a lot of parallels there. So that's how I, and then also looking back, my son was a Gestalt language processor. He's
Oh,
22 now,
yeah.
but I was like, wow, this all makes sense. And I did a lot of the things that speech pathologists do, just narrating his language, affirming his language, really doing a lot of, we did a lot of reading, a lot of repetition. He was hyperlexic, so he was very interested in letters. So everything he was interested in before I knew about, I just naturally integrated into our household. So like, because he loved letters and numbers so much, I got everything I could LeetPad related and put letters on the dishwasher and letters on the refrigerator and leapfrog different activities around the house. And we read books every night and letters in the bathtub and just every kind of print activity imaginable we would implement, and just using natural declarative language before I really realized that's what I was doing. All of that helped him. He was in speech therapy for about from the time he was 15 months old to 22 months old. And so, and then he was fine because he got that support so young. And now he's graduated from college and is doing really well. He has a job in marketing, and you would never know that he went through any of the therapies. So I would say that that's those two kind of tie together. I've always loved reading myself, so I've always been interested in literacy, and just did a lot of those things naturally with my own children without realizing how important they were until I really started studying literacy over the past couple of years.
Yeah, now you have the names for things and the frameworks for them. And that imagine it was really satisfying to like do all these things and then learn about the structure around what you've been already doing. I know I really enjoy that when I'm doing strategies or implementing ideas, and then I learn the framework that supports them. I'm like, oh, that feels so good.
That's so fun.
How do you feel like your therapy with autistic children changed once you learned about the ideas around GLP?
So definitely, I mean, it was like a light bulb came on. I was like, oh my gosh. I mean, the biggest takeaway was to presume intelligence and competence, that just because someone's non-speaking doesn't mean they don't understand. Not that I didn't think they did didn't understand, but just learning the way that they acquired language, it changed the way I modeled it and made me realize like more flexible language models to offer them. So like using the let's and that's and it's and how about a, and just really affirming their language. It really changed a lot. We did a lot of sensory. We'd always been doing the sensory activities, but I learned how important music was for them once I learned about what a GLP was. And that really resonated with me. And so I started implementing, incorporating that into the sessions more and doing a lot more hands-on activities. They really enjoyed that. More role play type things. Yeah, where we would role play different books and characters. They loved that. So yeah, it changed a lot. It really did. And then it just made me realize, a lot of kids would be stuck because they wouldn't have language modeled to them the way that they acquired it. And then once I learned how they acquired it, I was able to offer that thanks to the research of Marge Blanc and thanks to Alex Zachos and all that she brought out into social media. So I became obsessed. I hate to use that word, but I was just, and I've just been, ever since, I've just been, I love it. It's what I really, really, truly enjoy. Most of the kids on my caseload are autistic or neurodivergent. And they're just, I have learned that it truly is a spectrum and every child is different and no two kids are the same. So it's really fun. There's never a dull moment at all.
Yeah, I relate so much to what you're talking about of like once I accessed like the structure or the framework around it, it was like that's exactly what's in front of me. That is exactly the kids that are in front of me. And these modifications, the acoustic modifications, the affective modifications, shifting the power dynamic. I mean, it just those first that first like graduating class of clients where I made the shift, I'm like, whoa, what a difference. So it's exciting to hear from like other people who experienced that shift. But also like thank you for highlighting how different each kid is. And it's so important to tailor the ideas. I think, you know, it's helpful to be like, yeah, stages 1 through 6, and this is what they look like. But there are plenty of kids for whom that's not that clean and cut and dry. And there's recommendations out there that are going to apply to a good number of kids. I was talking to a mom today. I was coaching a mom, and she said, okay, we got this recommendation that you shouldn't do this with GLPs. And I was like, that does not apply to your kid, though. Your neurotype, like that doesn't apply. She's got that thing, like cognitively. So I always really appreciate when people bring that up of like, we've got a framework, but you've got to color it down to the kid in front of you.
I think a lot of times people can get really bogged down in the stages too.
Yes.
And I have found, I mean, it's important to know what stage the kids are in, but at the same time, it's also important to continue modeling language naturally and affirming their language and offering those flexible models and truly being child-led, for the kids who need that. And then some kids need more structure, and that's okay. It just, every kid truly is different, and just meeting them where they are is the most important thing.
Yeah, and I get nervous about like the black and white, like you have to do this, don't do this. Like I think there are more and more people being like, hey, this GLP actually like really, really loves structure. And they really it really helps them, especially if there's like overlapping or comorbid like executive dysfunction or other things going on. So and I like to live more in the gray area as much as I can. I'm an all or nothing thinker. I'm like working on it. So that gray area, I know for me as a clinician, is so important to spend time in.
And just to be flexible and to always just work with the child you have in front of you and not the child that you think they should be or that their parent thinks they should be. Just meeting them where they are
Yeah.
is so important. I mean, I've really found too that a lot of the kids I work with, the parents that are the most laid back and truly meet their kids where they are and accept them for who they are and embrace, the fact that they're autistic and they don't like pressure them, but they mod offer those language models naturally. Those kids do really well compared to some of the kid parents who, not that it, I mean, because I have anxiety, so I totally understand that, but who are anxious and who want to fix, we need to get them here and we need to do this and we need to do this. And the kids can feel that. And that makes them anxious. And it's really interesting to see that myself, like how, what a difference that makes when a parent is laid back, because kids pick up on that energy and, they want to be accepted.
Right. And it comes back to that affective experience. When we're near other people, we're sensing so much more than because they think about like someone can say certain words, but like we know, like, oh, they meant something really different underneath that. Kids, even without a lot of language, they sense the undertones, the energy of your body, the speed at which you move your body, the way you're like all those little cues.
Yeah.
and give information about your underlying emotional state. And, these kids are perceptive. And if your body is reflecting tension and fear, naturally, your child is going to be like, okay, what's wrong? If you're
Yeah.
should I be afraid?
Right. They totally pick up on that.
You do. And even when it comes to like your voice, I think a lot about acoustics and psychoacoustics. And there's an element of speech called timbre. And timbre, there's a couple of studies. I'd have to pull them up. I can't cite them just out of my head. Where they talk about how timbre, which is the tone or the quality of voice, you think about a flute and a tuba can play the same note. They sound
Yeah.
different because of timbre.
Right.
But our auditory brainstem, the first thing it processes is timbre. So the first thing, that tone, is
Yeah.
that's the first thing processed, and that tells us about safety versus danger. So if the timbre of your voice is impacted by stress, that's the
Yeah.
first thing that your kid is going to perceive.
That's so interesting.
Even if they don't know what the word means, the
Yeah.
tone and timbre of your voice says unsafe or safe. Wild.
Yeah, that's amazing. Amazing how kids can pick up on that. They're so smart.
We're wired for it. It makes sense. You think about like evolution and survival. Of course, we need to, the first thing that we process is this sound source safe or danger? Is that a tiger growling? Is that a babbling brook? Is that my mom? Is that an enemy? Super important for early humans and for us.
Definitely.
All right, back to literacy.
Yeah, of course.
So, paint me a picture. Let's kind of zoom out. When you think about your caseload now of Gestalt processors, what does supporting or working on literacy look like? And who do you not necessarily do it with?
That's a really good question. Well, every kid is different, of course. I really got more interested in it over the past year when I had a kid on my caseload that was hyperlexic. And I honestly didn't know what hyperlexia was until I started working with him. I mean, I'd heard of it, but then I truly saw it in one of my GLPs, and his mom had no idea he could read. And in our session, I mean, I always like to expose kids to things because we want to presume competence, we want to presume intelligence. And so I had these little Lakeshore learning locks. It's a toy, and they had like different, there were keys with different letters on them, and then the locks had sounds. So like there might be at on a lock, and then they would take the letter C, and like open it, cat. And then but he anyway, during that time, he picked up other keys and went mat or rat, and like so he was like changing it out, doing all of these phonological manipulation to the sounds and to the words. And I was like, oh my gosh. And so I was like, and then I started showing him words and he was reading them. And as his mom came upstairs, because I saw him at home and she was downstairs with sister, the little sister, was like, did you know he's reading? And she's like, what? And so I showed her and she started crying. And she's like, oh my gosh. And because in her mind, she worried and had anxiety about his autism, because you just, a lot of parents, and I totally understand, they don't know what their future is going to look like because it's an unknown. Like, this was her first child. She'd never had a child that, of course, was autistic because he was her first child. And so, she was just so excited that that was going to open up so many doors for him that he was able to read. So then that she went down a rabbit hole. I went down a rabbit hole about why he was able to read because no one had ever taught him to read. So that's when we started learning about hyperlexia. And I started, like, she got a coaching call with a hyperlexia specialist. And so the first thing that they told us to do was to get those boogie boards off of Amazon, a dry erase board, and write out things he was saying during the session. Writing out language models that we would offer to him, like, let's get the panda, let's get the dog, just writing those out and offering those to him. And so his reading kept getting better and better. And it made me really interested in literacy, like working, because I knew that there were so many different variables with autistic people with literacy, because there's not a whole lot of research that I had found. And so I was like, okay, I really want to learn about this so I can help other kids learn to read, because just seeing what a difference that made in this kid, and just watching his evolution of how he's learned to decode and start reading sentences and start reading simple books, before, all by the time he's 3 and 4 years old. And then seeing it in other GLPs, like I started seeing it in other GLPs, and I was like, oh my gosh. So I don't know if I'm totally rambling, but that's how I re really started getting more interested in the literacy component with my GLPs and my caseloads. So it does look different for every kid, but that's how I started it.
Yeah, I feel like learning about hyperlexia is just like the gates just like burst open. You're like,
It's crazy, isn't it? How these kids just learn this and they're just drawn to this.
no, it's like beautiful to watch that like for Gestalt processors where like this pattern seeking and the love of patterns, it finds itself so naturally with just this set of lines and curves, these 26 combinations of lines and curves that we see all around us, and then looking for those patterns. And patterns feel really safe. Patterns feel really good. There's predictability that there's 26, but there's novelty in how they're combined. And I talk about that a lot with therapists and parents I work with of this container of predictability with novel contents. If the container and the contents are novel, that's scary. That's hard to integrate. That's hard. That's too vulnerable. If the container is the same and the contents shift up, so it's this container of 26, but then the order's different, that might feel safe enough to integrate and play with. I just feel like I see that so often with GLPs and like that the hyperlexic patterns.
Yeah, so every kid, as far as I've got some kids who are non-speaking, and it's kind of hard to tell like what they are able to read. But one little girl I worked with tonight, we've had an AAC. She's been using Touch Chat with Word Power for a year. She's minimally speaking, and so we started implementing that and modeling naturally. And it took her several months before we never pressured her to say anything on the device, but it took her several months before she got really interested in it. And then she started exploring it. And now she's navigating it to where she purposely will go to different categories. I don't know if you're familiar with Touch Chat. You probably are. So, but for
Yeah, I
those who
use it
aren't,
with so many
I
GLPs.
love it. I
Yeah.
love Touch Chat with Word Power. It's so intuitive for Gestalt language processors.
And I like that you
But
link videos to video clips.
yes. She what one way I got her really interested in using it was the animal sounds page. And because of like how rich that is, like the intonation of the animals, she loved that, and that really got her interested. And so now she's able to go to categories. Like she'll go to foods, then she'll go to desserts, and then she'll go to cake, ice cream, and like touch. And she'll go to categories or in groups, hygiene, and then toothbrush. So, like, she's navigating that. And I have to think she's reading something to be able to. I mean, I know she sees pictures, but I just really do get the feeling that she's starting to read. I just have that feeling. Just because of how interested she is in that. And then books, just with the pre-literacy skills, she's able to hold the book the correct way. She turns pages left to right, and she's even starting to produce some words on the pages, that she, like in a lang in like a rich intonation. Like she loves Frozen books because she loves Frozen. So her mom got her a bunch of Frozen books. So it's always good with GLPs to get books of things they're interested in, and she's very interested in that. So then she naturally would go to those books and pick those books up and start turning the pages, and she would even produce some of the scripts or the things that they said on the pages. And so and then like some the sound books, there's some like Frozen sound books where you'd push the buttons and they say different things. She loves those. But I really love her interest in books, and also watching different movies, and her mom will have the captions on, which is another great thing to do with GLPs, putting the captions on because that can help them support their literacy. So every kid is different as far as what I do, but I really find that even the non-speaking or minimally speaking kids benefit from that AAC as just another modality of getting literacy in.
Definitely. And the accessibility of the keyboard on there, where even if they're not writing real words, I've had so many clients who I have the sense that underneath that there's the potential for hyperlexia, or it's there. Even the kids that don't turn out to be just like babbling on the keyboard, they love it so much. And it's engagement with letters in a way that's very, very playful. So the accessibility of the keyboard is, I think that's so fun. Also so exciting, because like so many GLPs love to put things in ABC order, but when a client starts to put things in QWERTY order, I lose my mind. They're arranging the keyboard. Oh, my heart. So there's two things I want to do. First, I do want to list out pre-literacy skills for our listeners. And then I do want to pull back and list some of the great strategies you've had so far. I'm making a list as we go, and then at the end, I'm going to hit everybody with the full list. But because I want to just like create a big chunk of it. So first, let's talk about pre-literacy skills. So there are six main ones that a lot of people talk about. First is print motivation. So just like that motivation to engage with print. And when I think about print motivation and GLPs, the first thing I thought about and I wrote in my notes was like Brown Bear, Brown Bear, the motivation around that, Chicka Chicka Boom Boom, Big Elephant, Llama Llama. And I'm going to talk about that in a moment when I share one of my strategies, why I think those books are so compelling for GLPs. So just put a pin in that. The second one, number two, is print awareness. You just mentioned this of like book handling, parts of a book, just that noticing print, noticing the different ways that print can be ordered and show up. It's on subway signs, it's inside your shoe, it can be anywhere. So that process of noticing and co-noticing with someone else. Number three is letter knowledge. Pretty easy to interpret that one. Four is vocabulary. Which is why I think a lot of people talk about really starting working on literacy at stage four, because we've parsed down, we've isolated down a lot of vocabulary words. And so there's that pre-literacy skill of vocabulary. Number five is phonological awareness. A lot of SLPs know about that. And number six is narrative skills. So being able to describe something, retell stories, act out a story. Maybe acting out that tableau. I see it all the time with GLP is reenacting a scene. And the idea of like kind of having a feeling of how a story unfolds, a bit of that arc that a story has. So those are six pre-literacy. Now let's pause, take a breath. I want to jump over to some of the techniques you listed, and I'll throw in one of my own. So the first thing you said, write out what a kid is saying. Do it, try it. It's so cool. If they don't notice and pay attention, whatever, you tried it. And then you've got a data point of what you tried and didn't work. Whiteboard, boogie board, piece of paper. Whiteboards are really great. I found the most success with those. I actually haven't tried a boogie board though, so I might be jumping to conclusions on what is the best. Are those the ones where it's like it comes up as a bright color and then you can erase it with a button?
I mean, I guess I'm calling like a dry erase board a boogie
Oh,
board.
okay.
Like that's what I'm calling a boogie board. I could be wrong.
Oh, I didn't know that they could be called that either.
I mean, that's what one of the moms I work with calls them.
It
She's
is. I
I mean,
just
okay, good. I
look. It's
was
yeah.
like, am I wrong?
It's a reusable writing pad. That okay. That is called a boogie board too.
Yeah,
Cool.
she keeps them. She when she talked to the hyperlexia coach, she kept them all over the house and I was like, that's such a great idea. Like she, 'cause you know, we're in multiple rooms of the house. Instead of having to carry it around, you just have them in multiple places with the dry erase marker, keep them in the car. Like I encourage parents to write, let's go. And so the child sees it. So you're helping their literacy, you're helping their language, you're showing them like the sequence of your first, we're going to get in the car. We're going to go to Target. Let's go. I see the sign, Target. It's red. and describing that and just pointing out the literacy in the environment.
Awesome.
So that's one of the things I do. I love using a dry erase board. I use it in almost all my sessions.
All of them. I carry it everywhere. I have two in my car. So you said where it what a child is saying, but I want to add a second one there just to clarify. I'm just going to keep adding this list. So it's anyone listening, be like, okay, that one, that one, that one is not just writing out what you're saying, but maybe write out what print you're seeing. So, like, if you see a sign that says something or target, looking up a target, then writing down that word too. Because there's that visual comparison of this 2D word reflects the 3D world. I talk so much about the 2D to 3D movement for GLP, moving in either direction.
Yeah, those real life experiences are so important and meaningful for them, and that really helps their literacy when it's meaningful like that. That's a great suggestion.
Yeah. You mentioned books about special interest. Please, listeners, please try it out. Go deeper on it. There are I've been look I just looked up like Moana storybooks. There's so many options out there. And because that way you're tapping into something that already lights up that reward pathway. And so it might free up more cognitive resources for the things that are harder. You mentioned books with those audio buttons. Very fun idea. Can they be annoying? Absolutely. But motivating? Definitely. Captions on during shows and songs. Fantastic idea. What I notice about hyperlexic kids is once they get the English down, they're going to put on Spanish,
Oh
Korean,
yes. Oh
Russian.
yeah, that mom was telling me. She's like, "Did you teach?" I'll pretend like his name is Michael. "Did you teach Michael Mandarin?" I was like, "What? No." And she's like, "Oh my gosh, he like literally knows Mandarin." They couldn't figure out where he learned it.
Yeah.
I'm sure he learned it on a video of some kind, you know. But it's amazing because they were like talking, like finding some things to ask, simple things, like not like he's fluent in it, but and he's 4. But it was just like amazing. And he lit up when they
Yep.
started like talking to him in that language.
Yeah.
Just, yeah.
And
So.
there's a connection between those two where, like, the captions and the interest in other languages and the auto button books, there's really good books with those audio buttons of these other languages. So I recommend if your hyperlexic client or child becomes interested in Russian's a big one, Mandarin's a big one, Korean, Spanish. It tends to be a lot of the languages that have a lot of intonation, even like tonal languages. But if you can then get a book that has the print in that language and it can speak it out, go for it. It's a cool option there. I'm going to try and find a link that I can share with our live audience for those books. Ready for some of mine? Here we go. So I mentioned I want to talk more about Chicka Chicka, Brown Bear, Bear Hunt, Llama Llama. It relates to that idea I talked about earlier of predictable container, novel contents. So books like Chicka Chicka Boom Boom and Brown Bear, they are very, very strongly patterned. Da 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 da. But it goes beyond just the rhythm and changing that language variable. Like I see a blank, yeah, I see a blank, blank looking at me. So there's two variables changing. Actually four, I apologize. Like color animal, what do you see? I see a color animal look at me. So those variables are changing. It's beyond that because if you look visually, you're seeing blank background, bold animal. And so it's the container is always the same, and then the contents are a little bit different. The container of the lyric or the prose is the same, but some of the words change. So it's got that balance that I think is really good to these kids. Whereas a lot of storybooks, they have beautiful illustrations, they're gorgeous. There's a lot going on, and there are a lot of patterns page. So I recommend if you're trying to promote this early literacy with GLPs is look into books that have that kind of container contents balance. Chicka Chicka Boom Boom does it, where and it involves literally the letters. bear hunt. You're going to three separate locations, very clean.
Some of the Pete the Cat books, like this one, Pete the Cat and the Pepperoni Pizza Party.
Yeah.
That one is so cute. My kids love that because it's like,
Yeah.
it's a party, a party, a pepperoni pizza party. And then, like, each one they add like a different ingredient. Have you seen this book?
I haven't, but that's exactly it.
So
Each
cute.
page, yeah. It's that sequence of information. Anything with Eric Carle, anything. I wish I had bought stock in Eric Carle. Like
I know.
Hungry Caterpillar,
Oh, my kids love that. My GLPs love that.
that sequence of information of like one this, two this, three this. It's got this order to it. But again, great white background, bold image. So I recommend books that have that. Llama Llama is similar to that. There's so many others, but those are the ones I see most often. Another one that I love using for literacy with GLPs is you're talking about writing what you're saying. This was from one of my clients who, like, when hyperlexia hit, it was like, boom, it was wild. It burst out. And he wasn't as interested in me writing out just the words. So I was thinking, okay, what might catch his eye? I'm gonna draw an animal and then put a speech bubble with the language inside. Instantly, instant. He was in, he was hooked, and now he loves watching words being written. So I would draw his favorite animal is a sheep. Like, I love sheep. So I would draw a little sheep with a big speech bubble, and then I'd write down like a potential possible gestalt, or he's moved. He's like almost stage five at this point. It's incredible. But I'd be writing down possibilities, combinations of words that he might want to pick up and acquire, and like putting the words in that speech bubble related to the special interest that made the difference for him.
Yeah, that's right. So you're a good artist. You're able to draw.
Apparently I'm good at it. People
I
like
cannot draw, but I cannot tell you how many of my GLPs want me to draw. They love, and they're good artists,
Yeah.
and they want me to draw. And I'm like, oh, good Lord, you're asking me to draw. But it's they love that, and that's another modality where you can, draw the picture and then write little sentences under it, especially if like you're modeling things from the DSS.
Yeah. Oh,
Just like whatever grammar structure they're working on and making that very repetitive. Another
yeah.
thing I like to do is make experience journals for my kids.
Yeah.
Have you heard of those? I learned this from a friend of mine. Go ahead. I'm sorry, I didn't interrupt you.
I heard about, I think, from the, what are they, listening and learning protocol? I'm not sure. Go for it. Go for it.
So my friend, yeah, she worked at a deaf school. And yes, they did. They made experience journals. And so, like, whatever activity they were doing, they would draw a picture on the page and they'd write a simple sentence about it. So, my little guy loved making, he loves making cakes. So, we would write the steps out. So, because he was also into pictures. So, he'd draw a picture of a cake and I would write, let's make a cake. And then he would draw on the second picture like a bowl. Let's mix it. And then on the third picture, I gotta get a spoon. Or on the third page, I gotta get a spoon, drawing a picture of a spoon. So then you take the whole sequence of those and then you staple them together. And it's a little book called an experience journal. So
Cute.
then they carry that over with their mom or dad or whomever, their caregiver is, and they read it. And it's just like their language. Or whatever language models have been offered to them. And it's more meaningful to them because it's a real world experience that they enjoy with a preferred activity. And then it helps them because, it's they see that and they remember it
Yeah.
during the session.
And you're tapping into multiple senses. If I hear often this idea with GLPs of like, just model, just model. And I'm like, can we please go further than that? Because the auditory processing differences in autism, your voice may not really be cutting through all the competition of all the other sensory information. So I like that
Right.
idea of bringing the visual, bring in the tactile information to help map the language onto something real. That mapping process is so important. I also love that idea of an experience book because you're creating this tangible package of information that can then go with them. Fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great way to carry it over. Yeah.
And also like a really fun, tangible way to like look back in the future and be like, whoa, look how far we've come.
Yeah, it's so fun. I also love using props. So
Okay.
like I love speechandsmile.com. It's like a resource I use. I love her. She's an entrepreneur. I think she's in Toronto, Canada. I like this Pete the Cat. I like to do themes, not always. It depends on the child. But I've got the kids I had today love foods. So I brought all these different pizza toys, a pizza sensory kit, and then I always have a book related to the theme or depending on what their interests are. And then there's these little props that she sells that go with the books. And so it makes it interactive. Like there's a little Pete the Cat, and they love like the little hands-on, like the little characters, and they can manipulate those and like pictures that they can manipulate. And that's just like another sensory component. I have found that my kids love just the book. That's really gotten them engaged with the books because it's like another, it provides like a little sensory, multi-sensory experience. And they think that's fun to play with the toy.
Oh, that's
So,
fantastic. Yeah,
yeah.
bringing the books to life. Again, it's this like phrase I use, like 2D to 3D, 2D to 3D. Connecting with the information on a flat surface, which is great. I mean, like flat surface of an iPad, flat surface of a book. And then how can you pull that out into when I think about like embodiment and movement? So like there's this phrase called embodied cognition, and what happens when you are thinking about the world and experiencing information while you're in motion? And it's a very different process than just like the passive taking in of information. So that's great to like bring it into their hands. Even like acting it out on a bigger scale. So like using your whole body to become a character to act out the text. Like there's been times when I've been assigned a role as a character in a book, and they really want me to like say the words that the character says. Great. But then I'll take my whiteboard, I'll make a big speech bubble, and I'll hold it next to my head like the character. And so it's pulling those words up and out, and it's a more embodied way of doing it. There's so many ways to draw it outward.
Yeah, that's great. That's so good. I love that so much.
Last
Yeah.
one. Oh, sorry.
No, you're good. You're good. Go ahead.
I was gonna say I have one more strategy to add in before I want to jump into talking about executive functioning. But did you have something to add there?
Oh, no, yeah. Just basically incorporating visuals into the sessions too, like the props and just different sensory activities that you can bring, like shaving cream, which I'm sure a lot of people are aware of this, like the shaving cream and writing the words in the shaving cream from the book, or just sand, anything that you, or Play-Doh, taking anything that you can to like shape out the letters and write words with the different sensory materials, because a lot of autistic kids have those sensory needs or they're sensory seeking and they enjoy those textures and get so much input from that. So I enjoyed, doing that too, as
And
well.
it's an active way of creating the letters and creating the words rather than just like not passive. I don't mean that as like the less active process of just like visually reading it. When you're making those letters, I mean, you've got to extend your attention span. You've got to be like, there's a commitment to it. It's more of an active process. Segue, attention, executive functioning. So when we think about how executive functioning ties into language, pre-literacy, and literacy, what comes to mind for you?
Well, it's basically the foundation of everything. So if you don't have executive function, you're going to struggle with your language because you really need that attention, that perception, all of that, the verbal working memory, the nonverbal working memory, all of those things, those roots I've learned through Tara Sumter's cohort, which I highly recommend to anyone watching this. She is amazing. And it has been a game changer for my GLPs, just because a lot of my kids would struggle with that attention and perception. And so, because you of course want them to be aware of the book. Are they aware that the book is there? Are they attending to the book? And so, I see somebody said something. Can you put that name in the chat? Are you talking about Tara Sumter? Okay.
I'll get
Yeah.
it. I'm gonna get
So
it.
she is amazing. So just, you working on the attention and perception of the child's environment through reflexive questioning. So like, where's your flashlight shining is an analogy that you can use, like where you turn the lights off, of course, making sure that they're okay with that. And then shining a flashlight. Oh, where's the flashlight shining? It's shining on the floor. It's shining on the door. It's shining here. It's shining. Just talking about where it's shining. And that's a metaphor for their attention. And so I've used that with a lot of my kids. Where's your flashlight shining? I mean, we've worked on it. It's shining on the book. I mean, of course, like you're working on literacy directly, like working on decoding and things like that when they're in stage four. So they have the language where they understand that, but we also always want to presume competence and intelligence that they understand. Because you've heard, well, we don't want to ask questions to GLPs, but then again, like you said, every kid is so different. And, it just meeting the kid where they are and knowing that they may be able to handle that question, and then I'm wondering where your thoughts are right now. And I'm wondering what should we be doing right now? And just like writing out a plan and just really helping that is really good for their attention and perception. And I've noticed just really drawing their attention to something is making them more likely to. The goal is not really the sustained attention, but the actual attention to the task has been like so meaningful and impactful for my kids on my caseload.
Great.
I've seen huge difference.
Yeah, related to when you brought up working memory, that really stands out to me. I often talk to families about how in the autistic neurotype, almost across the board, working memory is impacted. Verbal and even spatial working memory, according to like the research that has been done in the ways of people to do it. And so working memory is impacted, but one of the forms of memory that is really, really strong is that musical memory. And so one of the ways that you can extend working memory and a lot of executive functioning is through music, which would definitely be a good future episode. But by using musical input, and writing out lyrics too, trying to put those together, that is a great way of helping to kind of bootstrap that working memory through the memory ability that is like naturally very strong for so many GLPs.
There's an app I really like that I've been using with my GLPs too when they're in stage four, and it's hearbuilder.com. And so it's auditory memory is the one that I really like. So they have, and it helps verbal working memory and nonverbal working memory. So the verbal working memory, they'll have like numbers, and they'll say like to the child, they'll start with like level one. And they'll give them three numbers to put in 5, 4, 6. And the child has to put that in the keypad 5, 4, 6. And then they'll get it right or wrong or whatever. And so they go to like, they get to where they're doing like a 10 second delay, like on a certain level. And there's four digits 5, 6, 3, 4. And then they wait 10 seconds because they want the child to hold that in their verbal working memory. And then they have to put that in the keypad once the keypad appears. It has made a big difference because it helps that verbal working memory piece, which is so important for literacy. Because kids may be able to know, like you see kids where they know like all their sounds and what the letters' sounds are, but then when you go k-at, they may go k-at, and then they forget like what sounds.
What came
Like when
first?
they use a k-at, and they may be able to say that, but then they go back and they just say a random word because they don't remember what sounds they said to make that word, which is verbal working memory. And so that helps with that. And then it also does like little passages where it will do a little story. Go to the mall on 4th Street, you'll see a banana on the bench. And so then it'll like, so it'll have like a picture there and it'll take it away and it'll have multiple choice. What will you see on the bench? A ball, a banana, a boy, a lemon. And then they have to remember in their mind that nonverbal working memory piece, that visual sketch pad of what they saw, and then recall it So it's like uses verbal and nonverbal working memory. I love that app so much, HearBuilder.com. I use it with all my GLPs that are in stage 4 or 5 and 6 too, because a lot of them really do struggle with that.
I'm seeing it. Is it something that you get on desktop, on an iPad? Where do you access it?
Yeah, so it's a little bit complicated at first signing up for it. You go and you sign up on a desktop, but you download the app on like an iPad, and then you sign in on the iPad with the username and password that you accessed on the laptop, and they'll
Got
give you
it.
like a code. But as an SLP, you can have a membership for like $10 a month, and you can have up to 4 kids that it'll hold your kids' data.
Oh, nice.
So you'll be able to see their data and what level they're on, and like be able to see their progress, and like maybe report that for a progress report or your SOAP notes, for example. And then
And
they can do it at home, but they'll have their own username and password
Oh,
that you
even
assign them. So you, 'cause you can save 4 kids at a time. So if the kid's name is Bobby Brown, for example, then Bobby Brown can go in and sign in with his name and his password and that code, and it keeps all his data, and he can do it at home for carryover. And that makes your life easy because that's your homework.
Yeah, oh, I like
And
it.
they like it because it's interactive and they have little games on there too.
14-day free trial, guys.
Yes. Oh my gosh. But spoiler alert, you're going to want to pay for it because it's so good. I love it. Use it all
I
the
definitely
time.
have to check it out. I love that because it's like I've got clients where like we started at stage one and now we're in stage four and I'm like I need more. So this is great. All right, I've got one more literacy idea. If anyone here follows me on Instagram, you know how obsessed I am with label makers.
Oh my gosh, I love that. Oh, I told another mom about that because you did it. And she bought a label maker. Sorry, I interrupted.
All my speech therapist friends make fun of me all the time. They're like, make any labels lately? Yes, 100.
I love it.
My label maker is literally within reach right now. It has
Love it
been,
so much.
it's been like amazing for so many kids, but I had one client for whom it changed everything. Like his mom like really said, she's like, Corinne, this was the turning point for him.
Oh my
It was this
gosh.
point, we're on the playground and transitions are so hard, as they are for a lot of neurodivergent kids. And what I did was I got this label maker and I got it out. I put it up to the highest level of font, really big. And I typed in the steps of what that transition back to the car would be. And I narrated aloud, number one, and I sang it too to help with working memory. Number one, bye-bye, Corinne. Number two, get my bag. And I went through like seven steps. I made sure he could watch it come out slowly.
Ooh, that is
He
so cool.
loves machines. So it was perfect. Hyperlexic, loves machines. Him watching it, I swear his whole body got so calm.
Oh my
He watched
gosh, so
it was like
awesome.
2 feet long, but then mom sent me a video after because I didn't know how it was gonna go. I didn't walk to the car with them. He carried it the whole way to the car and was reviewing it. Easy
My
transition.
gosh, that's so amazing. I'm gonna need a link to that label maker.
I love it, and it's really big and it's got the QWERTY keyboard, so it's like well arranged. And you like push down this lever and it goes like Ch-ch-ch, this great cutting noise. The kids, they don't let me do it anymore. They do it. But for this kid, because he got to be a part of the process and watch it and just this reward of having the tangible language, the tangible steps, since then they've been using it for everything. Anything that's hard that needs steps, they'll make a label. They've used it for play too. They've labeled like street signs with it. I have some clients where like we label things around the house for them, even for like a stage one kid where we'll type out and print like a potential gestalt, like this is the door or gotta go outside. And so I'm big fan of the label maker. I highly
That
recommend
is
it.
so great. I'm gonna get it. You send me the link
Send
and
you
I'm gonna
my
get it and use it. And because I remember you making a reel about that, and I was like, oh, I need to get this. But then it was like a little more than at that time I was able to spend. But I need to just get it because, yeah,
And
it
there's
sounds.
cheaper ones. There are much cheaper ones. The reason I splurge a little bit is because I have clients who love to throw things, and this one is very sturdy. And I also love this one because you can get so many different colors of the tape. And so for like a client who loves pink, they've got pink.
How long will the tape last? Like, when you get it?
Ooh, good question. I haven't really tracked like wait, stickiness or length of printing?
Just like the length, like if you buy the, is it like a roll of tape that you put
The
in
roll.
there that'll come out? So like, will
I
that last a couple weeks, a couple
depends
sessions?
on the kid. Depends on
Okay. Okay.
I have some kids where they're typing stuff out like the whole session. So I don't know. I haven't tracked patterns with it. But I think you can get different lengths, like 15, 20 feet.
That is so amazing. I'm totally getting one.
Awesome. I highly recommend it. It's also helped me with my executive functioning of organizing my house a little bit. So
Do
a little bit selfish there too.
you like to organize?
No.
Oh, okay.
I'm like the type B SLP, you know, the creative, theatrical one who, if you saw behind this computer, you'd be like, well, your house should be condemned. So, no, working on it. And it's so fun. I really try and pull the strategies from my work with kids and bring them into my to help me too. So, all right.
That's
So,
amazing.
coming up on time, this is a moment where if anyone has a like a final question or a thought, I do see someone else is looking for the link of the label maker too. Like you mentioned, it is a bit more of an investment, but it's extremely sturdy if you've got kids who are a bit more rough and tumble. Let's give a moment for someone to maybe ask a question. I'm gonna get that link for you guys. And then Kim, I did put the link to your private practice in the chat earlier, but tell us about where people can find you and if there's anything like any products you've created that you'd recommend people checking in on.
Yeah, so I'm on Empowering Speech Service. I'm under Instagram as Empowering Speech Services, and I'm also on Teachers Pay Teachers under Empowering Speech Services. I have a store with digital products. I make a lot of neuroaffirming social stories that like help kids with the steps of an event, like going on the airplane, a fire drill, different things like that, and trying to make them as neuroaffirming as possible and supporting their executive function. And I have a lot of things on Gestalt language processing and vocabulary and comprehension, and just different things like that in my store. So, and I've written a parent's guide to echolalia, and it's and Marge Blanc edited it for me. So it's
Oh,
got her
cool.
approval, which is really important. So it goes through all six stages of Gestalt language development, and it helps the parent support their child's language naturally at home so that they know what to do. Because I had so many parents reaching out to me on social media because they didn't have access to a speech therapist in their country. And so I wanted to help them, like, come up with just basically a condensed version of what they could find through reading Marge Blanc's book, looking on Meaningful Speech, looking on just like communicationdevelopmentcenter.com, everything, just to kind of streamline and make it more parent friendly.
Awesome.
And so it's an ebook that you can find when you go to my social media or to my Teachers Pay Teachers store, and they could download that immediately as well. So.
Fantastic. I appreciate that. And I just put the link in to my storefront. Ethically, I have to let you know that if you click on the link, I will make a very, very small commission. And if you order this through my storefront, I will make a slightly less small commission. I just have to tell you guys that. This is not me pressuring you to buy anything, I promise.
Yes, same thing with my Teachers Pay Teachers. I do make a commission off of that in the book too. So.
And I think we have one final comment. Jennifer said, just wanted to say that I work with deaf and hard of hearing students who use cochlear implants and hearing aids for learning to listen and speak. We are enrolling a few GLPs, so this is all really relevant and exciting.
That's so exciting, and I loved working with hearing impaired with children who, it's different, like in the deaf, there's like the deaf culture, and then there's child with hearing loss, child with cochlear implant, versus like when you go into the autistic, where it's there are some parallels there. Like in working with autistic people in the past, we'd say person with autism. Now, autistic people, most autistic people want to be called autistic. It just depends on the person, of course. So I remember that being in the deaf culture, a lot of deaf people wanted to be called deaf, but then some wanted to be called person with hearing loss. So it's interesting how there's the parallels. And I loved working with cochlear implants and hearing aids. So it's really interesting, like how these two worlds collided, and my passion for both worlds collided because I love language so much. It's so
Me
fun.
too. Love language.
Is it fun?
All right, Kim, thank you so much. This was awesome.
Thank
Make sure you give yourself credit for the CEUs back on speechtherapypd.com and join us for the next episode. Bye, everyone.
Thank you. So fun.